Welcome to the Nobody Told Me That podcast. My name is Teresa Duncan, and my goal is to share information that you probably weren't thinking about. I love preparing my friends for situations that may come completely out of the blue. I also want to share with you many of the tidbits I picked up over the years. If you absolutely have to tune out before the end of the show, make sure to check out the show notes for more details on today's topics and information about my online class, Dental Insurance Design and Management. And thank you so much for making me a part of your day. I'd like to give a shout out to my friends at Synergy Dental Partners for sponsoring our podcast. They know how important the admin team is to our industry. Synergy is a group purchasing organization, or GPO. GPOs reduce your overhead with lower supply costs. They also have partnerships with labs and various service providers. You owe it to your revenue cycle to check them out. They're giving Nobody Told Me That listeners a 2-month free trial and a $200 Darby credit for new Darby customers. For more information, check out the link in the show notes or go to odysseymgmt.com/synergy. Welcome back to another episode of Nobody Told Me That. And I've got a repeat guest who, not just a repeat guest, but like one of my dear friends. We're practically related in a way too. We are. Dana Johnson with Navoni. Welcome, Dana.
Yeah, you're like my road sister, you know, like
we see
each other so much on the road, and you know, it's always good to go out for drinks and dinner and see each other at receptions, and like, you know, we're just sisters that live on opposite ends of the country.
I know. You're in outdoorsy Denver and I'm here in, like, you know, the DC swamp. So, but so let me just preface too that when we get together, a lot of times it's not just like, oh, how's the family? How's that? It is like usually like, what's going on in your offices and what's going on with insurance and what's going on here? And I always have people saying, I wish, you know, we take pictures like with Kevin, your husband, Kevin Henry, editor of Dr. Bicuspid, like he's in the pictures or Rita's in the pictures. And I always get comments like, I wish I was a fly on the wall, sitting on that table, listening to your conversations. And I'm like, yeah, me too. Because we do talk about so many good things that I think lots of offices could benefit from. So let's be casual. Let's be fun. Like we always are.
Oh, for sure.
But we were talking in the pregame about training for teams. And then the accounts receivable piece came in. And you said something interesting. You said, this quarter has been all accounts receivable conversations. And so for those of you who are not familiar with Navoni, Navoni is like the super user group for Dentrix. I mean, honestly, like if you want to know anything about Dentrix, accounts receivable, revenue cycle management, Dana's your girl. The membership, such a crazy value for what you get, lots of trainings, lots of time with her, but she spends a lot of time in office. You spend a lot of time talking with offices and teams. And so why all of a sudden is accounts receivable like the thing that's blowing up your phone? What's going on?
Yeah, it's interesting because as you know, with the labor shortage that we have, the front office is feeling very stretched and overwhelmed. And a lot of times what happens is they get so focused on the day-to-day tasks, like the answering the phones and checking patients in and out and all of that, that they, a lot of things get on the back burner. And, you know, one of the easiest things to put on the back burner is accounts receivable. And so then I get calls from doctors that are like, you know, I don't have any money in the bank. I don't know what's going on. I don't even know how to find my accounts receivable. Help me? And, or, you know, they lose their office manager and now the doctor is all of a sudden thrown into posting payments and making, you know, figuring out what to do with accounts receivable. And so I've had a lot of that this year. I mean, it's been just, like you said, blowing up my phone like crazy. And so I've been talking about accounts receivable a lot because if you don't collect what you produce, you can't make payroll, you know?
Yeah, and that's important because the so there's payroll, you got to keep the doors open. I mean, you're for those of you who are newer, I always want to make sure that the newer listeners who are in newer dentistry that we don't throw around a whole bunch of like KPIs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So key performance indicators, but one thing that we talk about a lot is the BAM, the bare minimum, you know, the bottom line. So that number is how much it takes to actually turn on the lights in your office, walk through the doors. That's your payroll, your rent, mortgage, taxes, whatever, how much you need per month to keep the doors open. But just collecting that is not enough. You need above and beyond so that the doctor can get paid, but also to reinvest back into the practice so you can buy CBCT, so you can buy all this other stuff that you want to do, the same day crown machine and all of that. So is that also another level of awareness that they have now that they're having to run all these reports? They're like, oh, no wonder I can't afford this.
Well, and I think the doctors understand that, but what I really see is that the doctors have a really hard time sharing numbers with the team.
Interesting.
I go into practices, and we're doing a full day workshop. And I get really honest with them. I'm open, honest, and transparent. And I say, listen, I said, even though we are in the healthcare industry, we are a oral health physician clinic. We are a healthcare facility. But even though we're in healthcare, we are also a profitable business. And I'm talking to the team members. I'm saying, you have to understand that your raises, your new scrubs, your CE credits, your if you want to go to a conference, if you want that gym membership paid for by the doctor, if you want medical benefits, all of that is paid for out of the profitability of the practice. And if you want all of those things, then your practice has to be profitable. And if we're not producing and collecting what we're producing, you're not going to get any of that.
For sure.
So it's like stop asking for raises if the practice is not profitable because it's just not going to happen. And so I think a lot of it has to do with just the fact that a lot of times doctors don't know how to talk to their teams about numbers or KPIs, and the profitability of the practice. They get really nervous and they shy away from doing that. And I wish that more doctors would be more open, honest, and transparent about that because I always use a sports analogy. Kevin and I are huge sports fans, so we love football. And so we always use a football analogy where the quarterback knows how much time is left in the game, what the score is, what do I need to do to win this game? And if the team doesn't know how much time is still left on the clock and what we need to do to win, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, like if you're in week three of the month
Yeah.
and you're not even halfway to your goals, like you got to kick it up a notch, you know, at
Exactly.
that point. So, I mean, at that point, it's not even like we need to make huge gazillions of dollars. We need to keep the doors open, like if we're that far behind. So it's good to
Exactly.
know that. It's funny. I always, when doctors have said to me, I don't want to share the numbers. And I say, if you don't, they're running the reports anyways. It's not like they don't know how much we're collecting, but if you don't communicate to them what overhead is, then they think that you're just like Scrooge McDuck rolling around in it at home. Like,
For
so you
sure.
have to let them know what the overhead is and what the costs are. And I think it's, I don't know, I almost feel bad for our people who are working in offices like that because that keeps their business knowledge down to a minimum. There's not a lot of growth for somebody like that in an office
Agreed.
that won't share.
Agreed. They team members, they want to feel like stakeholders in this pra in the practice. They want to feel like they are on the board of directors. And they don't want to just be an employee that walks in and goes home every day. Most team members want that team development. They want those growth opportunities, like you were just saying. They want that. And if they don't get those opportunities, they'll go looking elsewhere for it.
Yeah, that's actually anecdotally. I had a girl who was trying to ask for a raise, and she said, I can never ask for a raise because we just barely make goal every year. And I said, why is that? And it was a lot of the, like, when the more she explained, it was the doctor not wanting to move forward with technology, not wanting to invest. And I said, you know, if you stay at this place, you're never going to get it. And it was a hard thing for her to hear, but there was no way they were going to ever turn a profit if they continued. Okay, so tactically, you go in, you run the numbers, you see the numbers and everything. What's the first thing that you have to roll up your sleeves and dive into usually?
Yeah, well, when I look at numbers, you know, there's about five really key numbers that I look at. Mm-hmm. And I don't get into the weeds too much. I like to look at things in a more of a 37,000 foot view. And, you know, so when we're talking about accounts receivable, there's probably about three numbers just in accounts receivable that I look at. I want to see the accounts receivable ratio, which is the comparison between what's sitting on the books divided by the total production per month. So it gives me a ratio. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want our accounts receivable ratio to be, less than a month's worth of production, so, and that's just kind of industry standard. Now, some offices will run a little bit lower, some will run a little bit higher. But if your ratio is over two, then you have more than 2 months worth of production on the books, which is a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Probably the most important number I look at when it comes to accounts receivable is the accounts receivable that's sitting on the books that's more than 90 days past due.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's shocking to me how much money we have sitting on the books that's over 90 days past due. Yeah. Because I talk a lot about how important it is to collect on the day of service. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. where really the entire team gets involved, is collecting on the day of service, because your money is worth 100% of its value today.
Right.
But if you let it go even 30 days past due, the value of that money has already gone down by about 15%. Mm-hmm. Once it hits 90 days past due, you've lost about, 35% of the value of that money. And it's crazy how much we let that money go, just sit on the books.
So it's not having collections procedures? Is it secondary insurance? Is it just nobody paid attention to insurance? I mean, is it a mix of all of it? Am I missing anything?
I know,
Moon wasn't in Saturn or Gemini. Exactly. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just a really big mix. A lot of times, so often, still to this day, so many practices just don't collect on the day of service. Mm-hmm. It's always like, we'll just wait until your insurance pays, and then we'll send you a billing statement. And it's like, stop doing that.
I know. It's so antiquated at this point in time. I think the only time I would excuse that is if like you're the second day on the job and there's no way for you to verify what it is, like you're totally blind. Okay, maybe. And only once, because you should be able to guess at least, right?
Yeah.
But I don't really have any other scenarios. I mean, even if you're out of network, you got to take a guess. Even if you're not sure exactly what the amount is, you got to take a guess. You got to attempt to collect it.
For sure. I mean, especially more so if you're out of network, because a lot of times when you're out of network now, the insurance check's going to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's happening, you have to collect 100% of what you do today. And so I think it's a big mix. I also feel that a lot of times, the clinical team is not trained that not to let the patient walk out the door. Mm-hmm. Not release the patient from their appointment today without checking to see, is there a copay today? Yeah. Can I collect that copay today? So that's one of the top three things that I teach my teams about accounts receivable as a team sport, is that mm-hmm. the entire team can be involved with collections and accounts receivable, and it will make a significant impact in the profitability of the practice.
Now you were a manager. And you worked the front desk in an office for years, right?
Yes.
So what I have found talking to other managers is that we don't have a problem. Like if a patient walks out and we weren't able to get their payment or whatever, we don't have a problem getting up around the desk and going outside and saying, hey, come back here. I don't think we're just like, oh, we need to go get that person. Right. And my girl Jean used to follow them out into the parking lot and be like, oh, you forgot, come back in. And we didn't think that was weird, but clinical team members would always be like, oh my God, what did you do? You can't just follow them out of the office, right? So I'm telling you guys, it's like, don't get stalkerish, right? You know, don't tackle them, but there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, hey, this is how things go in our office. Mm-hmm. This is the expectation. And if they try to sneak out the door, believe me, I'm making a note about that somewhere. we got a runner here.
We have a runner. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, we have a flight risk.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So collect in the operatory. But you're seeing more clinical assistants talking money now? Are you seeing that?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, it makes
my gosh.
So happy.
That makes me so happy. Me too.
Yeah. Good.
Me too.
I mean, it alleviates the burden on the front. And they're so well poised to answer clinical questions. Like, why not? Right?
I know. Well, I had a call with a doctor recently and she's like, Dana, she's like, my office manager, she goes, you can see her body language just tense up and the tone of her voice change when she has to talk about money. You can just tell that it is the most uncomfortable thing for her to do in the office, you know? And I said, well, she shouldn't be doing that.
Let's just be honest about this, right?
Exactly. Just because she's the office manager or the front office lead, she doesn't need to be talking about money. Let's take that away from her. Let's make her a little bit more happy. Let's give her some joy in her life.
For sure.
And I said, okay. So then we started talking about it. I said, so how do you feel about your clinical assistants talking about money? She goes, oh my gosh, I think they'd be fantastic.
Nice.
And I said, because I've been in two offices just this year where the clinical assistants and the hygienist, not so much the hygienist, but a lot of times the clinical assistants are preparing the treatment plan, sending it to the printer, presenting it to the patient, talking about the payment options and scheduling. And it's this beautiful choreographed dance that they're doing.
That's awesome.
I know. And I'm like, you know, we get stuck in this in our old ways that all the money has to be talked about at the front desk. And I'm like, we can do whatever we want to do. It's our practice. And we just need to put the right person in the conversation. You know, I don't care if it's the clinical assistant or the hygienist or the office manager to talk about money, but someone has to talk about money.
Right.
You know,
they're not getting out of here with conversation.
They are not getting, my rule, whenever I'm working with an office, and sometimes offices think that this is like super too strict. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't back down on this. Nobody gets on my schedule without a financial conversation. You know,
fantastic.
We never scheduled the crown prep or the fillings or anything that required a copay. Nothing got on the schedule without a financial arrangement. And
it's weird that would come across as strict. Like, I feel like, from taking it from the customer point of view, like I expect that. Like I feel better if you're giving me a heads up. I don't want to come in and just, you're going to pull some number out of the sky and now all of a sudden it's 2,000 instead of whatever I thought it was going to be. I just feel like that's good customer service.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, you don't purchase a flight to go on vacation without knowing how much you're going to pay.
Right. You know, can you imagine just show up at the airport and whatever the going rate is that day is what we're going to pay?
Yeah.
No way.
or think about that. You get board the plane without paying for the flight first and you get to your destination. You land in Cancun, Mexico or whatever it is.
Right.
And then they say, oh, well, that'll be $2,000. And you're like, well, can I make a payment? Can I make payments on that? You know,
they're like, no, back to Seattle.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, you know, and I don't want to compare our dental practices to shopping, but you have to remember that dentistry is competing for, you know, discretionary income.
Sure. Well, a patient is a consumer. I mean, there's no getting around that anymore, I don't think. So, and I think they were, even when you and I were managing in the office, they still were, but it was just very different. Like insurance wasn't driving a lot of conversations and dentists were so entrenched in the community. Your dentist that you worked for was well known in the community. Mine was well known.
Yeah.
So like, it wasn't just, you know, there was a relationship there, which is harder to build, I think, nowadays.
Yeah. And I think it's just also learning what the patient drivers, what are their motivators.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been learning that over my 30-year dental career is what motivates people's behavior, what motivates people's buying behavior. And
how does that go over in training, though? How does that go over in training? Because I remember when we first had our training and we were talking about, you know, we were going to do disc profiles on the patients and all that. And,
yeah.
And I was like, I have so much to do. And now I have to profile the patients, like, really? And I mean, it worked out. I mean, it was easier than I thought. But what's the response to something like that? I mean, is it intuitive already or what?
I think it is kind of intuitive already. I think people are already kind of in tune with, you know, just things people say. You know, I think it's important to listen to what your patients are saying, you know, mm-hmm. as far as if they are wanting to do, say, ortho, like in a lot of our offices are doing Invisalign, mm-hmm. you know, or ortho clear aligners these days. And, you know, it's like, what motivates them? Do they want straight teeth for their daughter's wedding that's coming up? Or is
sure.
it that they just want more straight teeth just, you know, for themselves? It's maybe it's function.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think a lot of times it's just listening to what our patients are telling us. And
yeah.
so you can kind of tell if patients are more, you know, self-absorbed, you know, they want those, that vanity purchase,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
if
That's
it's,
funny.
If it's more of a functional you know, or, you know, things like that. I think a mm-hmm. lot of offices are pretty in tune already with patient buying behavior, but that's what we have to kind of look for. And it's important but getting the financial arrangement is just the most important, you know, how are patients going to pay on the day of service?
Mm-hmm.
And also just, maybe, you know, making sure that the patient understands that their payment is due on the day of service.
Right. Or even before. I mean, if they yeah. want to do a deposit. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So you said the ratio, you said the amount over 90 days. Was there another metric that you look at?
And with collections, just the total collection, the adjusted
okay.
collection rate. Of course, 98% is still the gold standard. And, mm-hmm. you know, so we want to see that above 98%. But that's still important.
So what I've been talking about a lot in classes is shortening up our cycle. So instead of like 90 days, I'm trying to push it down only because, so our claims are going out. So it's not 30 days. Cause you know, that's, you know, we're kind of old school. It was 30 days to send the claim and maybe hear something like
yeah.
that was the routine. And then it was another 30 days to attempt to collect from the patient. So we were already, you know, at 60 days out mm-hmm. and then 90 days, they were really late.
Oh yeah.
But now like we're doing, I mean, usually 10 to 15 day turnaround from statements. Like you got no longer is it 30 days to pay your bill, right?
Right.
Like we're trying to shorten that down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking in classes about even shortening down that 90 day and treating your 60 days as mm-hmm. the 90 days.
Yeah.
And it's really wild to see I've taught this twice already this year and the class divide is very interesting.
Yeah.
Half the class is like, yes, let's
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
And the other half is like, that's too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And which is fine. I don't know their office. They know their office better. I'm just asking for them to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hoping that we can get to a more shortened revenue cycle. Do you know any offices that don't even go to 90 days? They're just like 90 days. Psh, what's that? I mean, do you know of any like that?
Well, I have a few offices that actually run a negative accounts receivable.
Oh, it's fantastic. They
yeah.
take deposits and everything's mm-hmm. paid. That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have two or three offices right now that run a negative accounts receivable, which is very rare, but
mm-hmm.
also, you know, you just have to be on top of it. It's a completely different way of thinking
yeah.
About it. And I agree with you that we should definitely be more on a 60-day cycle. So what I teach is that, you know, we're following up on unpaid insurance claims still at the 30-day mark. You know, that would be mm-hmm. where you still are looking, okay, is it unpaid? I need to reach out to the insurance company and find out where this payment is.
Sure.
Yes, we should be getting paid within 10 to 15 days. I still am running the report and looking at the report at 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But then at 60 days, it's like, or even 45, like 40, between 45 and 60 days, if the claim isn't paid, I'm getting my patient involved.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm reaching out to my patient and I'm saying, you know, your insurance company hasn't paid on this. I've already reached out to them once. Here's their number, or you need to reach out to your HR department and give us some help, because at 60 days, this account balance is now belongs to you.
Yeah. Oh, and that always is like, that's fearful. Like, oh, you can see, like, even on the phone, you can hear them like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So that's good. Now, the one thing, so I'm intrigued. Let's go back to this negative receivables thing, because I'm sure everybody that was like driving was like, what?
You say?
So do you have an idea of like what makes them really successful? Like one or two things that if an office wanted to move to that, like what are these offices doing that an office listening could start doing?
Yeah. So a couple things. First of all, I've seen a lot of offices that take a reservation fee or a reservation deposit.
Okay.
So you don't even get an appointment unless you give us a deposit.
Okay.
And they call it, most offices will call it a reservation fee or a reservation down, you know, reservation fee.
And is it more than what their co-insurance would be though? Because I would imagine that that's the, like if you're in network, that would be the sticky wicket. Like you can't collect more than what they would owe. But I mean, you're talking like 100, or are you talking about the co-payment amount? I mean, what do you see them doing?
I see at least 100.
Okay. You know?
And if they're out of network or if it's fee for service office, they usually take a third of the appointment fee.
Okay. Okay. So that's fair. And then what happens if they no show or cancel? I mean, what happens there?
Yeah. So then they can reschedule, but they keep the deposit. And unless the patient is then going to leave the practice, then they have to refund it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
You know, they also have like a cancellation fee. So if you cancel within 24 hours of the appointment, you get 50% of the deposit back. But the thing about asking for a reservation fee or a reservation deposit is it cuts no-shows and cancellations down significantly.
Yeah. So if you're driving and listening to this, like you have to hear that again, because what Dana's saying totally echoes when I ask this question in my classes too. And I know Dana, you always talk to your people in your classes.
Yeah.
When I say, does this cancel your, or does this reduce your cancellation and no-show? It's like, it's not even that they have to think about it. They're like, yes. So, I mean, this really works.
Oh, absolutely. So a lot of offices will ask me about what's your viewpoint on a no-show fee. I'm not a big fan of having a fee if they no-show.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't change the behavior.
Exactly. I used to be a big fan, like, because I would be like, oh, let me charge you this. But it does. You're right. It doesn't change anything.
No, it doesn't change anything. You know, and then they're just mad. You know, because then it's like, now you have a flight risk, like we talked about earlier. Now you got to go chase them down for this money. You charged them $50 for a no-show. And now you've got $50 sitting on your accounts receivable and you're never going to get it. And now the patient's mad, you know. And so I like having the patient prepay for their appointment. Now they're vested. Now they have a reason to show up because they've already paid for it. And the patient is going to make whatever arrangements they can make to keep that appointment.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, except for the one thing that I know threw all of this out was COVID, just people getting sick and, you know, like, well, I've got a little bit of a cough. And we were all just like, stay home. Like, we don't care. Stay home.
Yeah.
Do they do this only on restorative or also on hygiene visits too?
I'm seeing both.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. So, the tide hopefully will be turning.
I know.
That would be great.
I'm seeing it on both.
Okay. All right. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, we should do that. Yes, you should. Go back and talk to your doctor and see, you know, if this is something you guys can walk through. You don't want to like just go in tomorrow and start implementing it. You got to talk. You got team has to understand everything. Just a reminder to check out the companies who support the show. My friends at Synergy Dental Partners are offering 2 free months to try out their lower prices for labs, supplies, and select software services. To sign up, visit odysseymgmt.com/synergy, and the link is also in the show notes. Have you implemented something like that? How was it describing that to the team?
So I've never implemented it. It was already there when I came in.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wasn't the one that was driving it. It was already in place when
Okay.
I was there, when I came in. So most offices that are implementing this type of process have done it to eliminate cancellations,
Yeah.
basically.
It's a huge
And
problem.
yep, it
Huge.
is a huge problem.
Yeah. Do you think it's getting better? It feels like to me since COVID, it's gotten worse. Like we used to always complain, and
Yeah.
but it seems like it's really just an, I don't know, it just seems ever present now.
Yeah. I think I don't have any statistics to back it up, like what the statistic ratio is on no-shows and cancellations. I know at Rocky Mountain Dental Conference, I know Carrie Weber gave a presentation on reducing no-shows and cancellations because I interviewed her for my podcast, and her class was packed. You know, it's like it's still obviously a big problem in the practice. So I think most offices implement this as a reduction in no-shows and cancellations. Now, if you just implement it on restorative, then you're doing it, of course, to already start the process of the patient making the payment, you know, and also it gives them commitment to the appointment. So I would definitely start it on restorative. If I hadn't implemented this in my practice yet, I would start with restorative and just let patients know that in order to schedule this appointment, we ask for a third down. And then the patient makes their kind of their reservation deposit and they schedule the appointment.
I like that. Now, so what are there any other reports that like doctors are like, I need this, or I've never seen this before? Anything else?
I think for doctors, it really has been just knowing other practice numbers. You know, another thing I bring up to doctors is your new patient and your referrals. Like, how are your patients finding you? I know that doesn't have anything to do with accounts receivable, but it's also a
It's
number that doctors really don't even know that it's that number is not happening, you know? And then patient retention as well. Yeah.
that is a hard number to track though, right? Like,
Patient retention.
well, I mean, because nobody ever wants to believe it, right? Because there's people that just leave and you don't know it. And, you know, they're like I'll say, okay, if this person hasn't been on your books in 18 months,
Yeah.
then they're kind of not really an active patient. We
That's
can't
true.
count that. And then they go, well, but our hygiene is backed up this long, and our patients, you know, they'll call in 2 or 3 years. And so there's always this. So really the measure is what do you call an inactive patient? And
Yeah.
that's where I get pushback from the doctors, where they're just like, no, they're a patient like for life. Like, what do you mean after 18 months? I'm like, no, not really.
I know. No, they're
So
really not. Yeah.
yeah. How do you define it? Is it 12 months, 18 months? What do you define it as?
So I define patient retention and active patients differently. So patient retention is tied to the continuing care system, like the ReCare system. And it is how many of your active patients have been in for their prophy or perio maintenance within the last 18 months. So that's how I define it. And the active patients is defined for me by how many patients have come in for an appointment within the last 18 months.
Okay, so you're tying recare, and then you're tying active patients as a whole to any appointment at
Yeah,
all.
yeah.
Okay, so if that number is really different, then you may have people who are coming in just for restorative and not hitting your recare. So that's how you kind of can push that conversation, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah.
good,
Yeah.
good, good. Now, one other thing that we talked about in the pregame was teams and onboarding and offboarding. I don't even know what the term is, like when they're out the door, right?
Yeah,
So
yeah.
the exit
The exit
interview.
interview, yeah.
So tell us, because you were like talking and all this good stuff came out at one time. So why is that important to you right now? The whole onboarding and offboarding,
Yeah.
whatever, that whole
Yeah.
experience. Why is that so important to you right now? And what do you want our audience to hear about it?
So a couple things. I'm a numbers girl, of course. I love numbers. I love looking at studies and surveys. And I've been reading some surveys from like HR Magazine and other business surveys, and mm-hmm. like with team retention, like employee retention numbers and things like that.
Hot topic.
Oh yeah. My gosh. And what I've been reading is that employees that don't have a comprehensive training program mm-hmm. or team development program at their company, 40% of those employees will leave their job within the first year.
40%?
40%. Oof. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that kind of tied into a conversation that I had with one of my doctors that I'm coaching with right now. He said, yeah, I did an exit interview with my front office team member. She said that, you know, the reason why she's looking for another job and why she's leaving is because she didn't have any training. She didn't know what her role was. She didn't know what to mm-hmm. do. She was just kind of put at the front desk and here's your chair and now go for it. And,
oh, wow.
And he said, that's on me. You know, I didn't provide her with the right training for her job. And she just felt like she was off in like la la land and didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I hear that a lot. I hear that. So let's say our office manager is retiring after 20 years. And now she's hiring a new office manager. Well, the new office manager that's coming in is being trained by the old office manager who's been there 20 years,
yeah.
who has all her bad habits
yeah.
and, you know, all her, you know, she's learned the software on her own. So she's mm-hmm. done her own training. You know, maybe she hasn't had any real comprehensive training. So now she's training a new office manager. So
yeah.
there's just this dilution of knowledge that mm-hmm. happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you bring on a new office manager, a new team member, and they're like, this doesn't seem right. You know, this just, I'm doing all these handwritten spreadsheets and why am I using Google Docs for this? And I mean, you know, and so it's so true. You know, you just, yeah. you can only train what you know. And that's why I'm seeing that.
That cracks me up though. Cause I mean, and to be fair, I'm sure there's some good habits that are being
passed down, I know.
But I like to think that I passed down some, and I'm sure you do too. Like we yeah. passed down some good stuff.
We did.
But I loved my Excel spreadsheets. I got comfortable with them. Right. But when dashboards came along, I was like, ooh, hot dang, look at
yeah,
that. Like,
I know.
There has to be a willingness to adapt to the technology. And unfortunately, what you're talking about is you know, if they're kind of holding on to the way that they used to do it. But the software training issue, I still am surprised at how resistant offices are to invest in software
yeah.
training. So they'll send you to an insurance class. They'll send you to a scheduling institute or a scheduling academy. They'll send you to whatever. But then they come home and they're still like, you know, half-stepping it on the
yeah.
on the software. So like, why is, I know it's changing because we're seeing a proliferation of people that are saying, I'm a Dentrix trainer and I'm an Eaglesoft trainer, which is great.
Yeah.
Although you always get my vote, you know that. But there's a lot more people out there that are doing that. So there's a market for it. But back in the day when you and I were managing, like hiring a Dentrix trainer was like, why are we hiring a Dentrix trainer?
Yeah.
So it's very different now. Are you feeling like that's another area that they are aware that they have to spend money on? Or are they calling you because they're like, okay, it's time I spend money on this? Like, when are they calling you?
Yeah, they're calling me when they feel like they have like met their at their end of their rope. You know,
oh,
it's somebody that has like finally hit rock bottom.
Oh,
and then they finally reach out to me and I'm like, why didn't you reach out to me sooner?
And yeah, you learn all these systems, but you don't know what to do with the keystrokes and the clicks and stuff. So it's like, man, that's like the last mile like that. If
yeah.
you could master that, I don't know. I'm so glad you guys exist for this.
Well, and you too. I mean, I send so many of my team members to your insurance course. I mean, it's just so good. And
well, thank you. But yeah. I also cannot teach them in the training, even through all the modules, I have to be software agnostic because everybody's different. But here's the thing is I always say, please consult your manager, please consult your software trainer, because I can show them what to look at for adjustments and all of that, but I can't run the report. And if I say, yes, you need to check your adjustments for this time period, and they're like,
I don't know how to do that.
My training doesn't land. And that's not good for me either. So I think it's so essential to have software training, regular software training. You know, what do you advise? I mean, do you have people that every year you go back to see them, every 2 years? What's your normal cadence?
Well, what I would rather offices do is just be in the membership where they have constant updates and constant resources to tap into. So that, let's say you have a dental assistant who is moving up to the front. And now she needs to learn how to be a scheduling coordinator. You know, well, then she just logs into the dashboard and she takes the continuing care is the lifeblood of your practice course. So now she knows how the continuing care system works. You know, so you don't necessarily have to schedule a trainer, or you're hiring a new person, you know? So I think I don't want training to be a burden. You know, I don't want training to be expensive. And so I want it to be affordable, and I want it to be easily accessible, and I want it to be available for everybody. And that's why I created the membership, so that we have those resources for everybody. But then, like, offices do have me come in and sit side by side with them for 3 days or so. That's a much bigger investment, and that's a bigger scheduling process, because, you know, they have to have a day without patients. And so, so that I think is more like every 3 year type of thing.
Okay. That's reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's totally reasonable.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is there, I know what I wanted to bring up. You and I will both be at Thrive Live in May. And that is, it's May, right? I think it's May.
It is May.
Oh gosh. Okay, good. I'm glad I don't have my calendar here. In Vegas at the Bellagio. I love the Bellagio. I know. So excited about that.
I love the Bellagio.
So if you need more Dentrix, you'll gobble up so much info. But it's not just Dentrix, because actually they asked me to not be software specific in my class. They actually said, don't worry about, like, never say the word Dentrix, just teach AR. And so I said, cool. But I'm looking at the other classes, and I think I'm going to take a bunch of classes, because I'm seeing like some good names on there. So I'm actually pretty excited. They really planned this one. It's good.
I know. I've been going to that. So it used to be the Business of Dentistry, and then they transitioned it to Thrive Live 3 years ago. And, you know, I've been to it every single year.
You've taught at it almost every year,
right? I think I've taught at it almost every year.
Yeah.
And this year I'm not teaching any of the Dentrix courses.
No?
No.
You're teaching a different course?
I am.
What are you teaching?
I'm teaching a course. It's called Hype versus Reality, the transition to like new practice management software.
Really?
So it's for an office that may be thinking about changing from one software to another, and kind of what to expect, what should your hopes and dreams be, you know, what are the myths versus reality?
Glad you're going to talk about that, because when somebody says to me, we need to switch, like, it's never like, we need to switch. It's like, oh. Yeah, because it's a disruption. It's just all new training and all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad they're going to have you do that. Yeah. So if you guys are wanting to go to Vegas in May, you can come see us, and I'll be sitting in a bunch of classes. I'm actually I don't get to take a lot of classes, so I'm actually really excited.
It's true. Yeah. You know, we don't get to, you know, take time out of our schedule very often to sit in on classes. So,
and if you go to the ADOM meeting, you'll be there this year. Dana's always at her booth. She always answers. You always have a ton of Dentrix users around you at the booth. Yeah. So go and see her. The one thing I just want to make sure we finish that whole onboarding. So this is what happens. People and Dana and I talk, we just kind of go off onto these other things.
Oh, there's a squirrel.
Right. Oh, I forgot to tell you. Yeah.
I know.
Okay. So the onboarding, and then of course the exit interview. When you are onboarding somebody, because it's nice that she gave this information in the exit interview, but we hopefully would never get that. With the onboarding, what are the expectations you set for a new team member coming in and learning enough to get going? Like, what do you set? You have to set an expectation, don't you? I mean, what do you say?
Yeah, I actually have a 6-week onboarding guide.
Okay.
That walks them through like the, okay, before they even walk in the door, this is what I would want you to do. Okay. And then day one, day mm-hmm. two, day three, you know.
And this is specific to the software or specific to systems in the office?
Yeah, both put okay. merged together.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times what happens is, you know, we hire a new dental assistant and we put them right into the chair. They go right into doing yeah. dental assisting or, yeah. you know, whatever the clinical processes are. They never even sit in the front desk to see like, what do they do at the front desk? You know, I have no idea what they do. Mm-hmm. So same with, you know, we can go the opposite way. You hire a new admin team member and they never know what happens in the back. They never get to sit in an appointment. They don't get mm-hmm. to listen to the verbal skills that happen in the back. So part of my onboarding guide is actually having a new team member sit in and shadow someone in the opposite department mm-hmm. so that they see what happens in those different departments.
I can hear the voice because I've heard this voice. But yeah. Dana,
yeah,
you want me to pay them just to yes. watch for a day?
I absolutely do.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
I 100% want you to do that. Because
why would I do that, Dana?
Yeah, because you are investing in that team member. So okay. remember what I said earlier about this statistic is that 40% of your new team members will leave their job within the first year if you yeah. don't give them team training and team development. So that's just part yeah. of that investment process.
Are you seeing clinical team members, hygienists also, when their bodies start to go, which is hard on them,
yeah.
do you see them transitioning up to the front a lot?
Sometimes clinical assistants, I really see hygienists just retire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That
stinks.
I know. I either see hygienists retiring or maybe trying to go into some kind of a consulting role or a coaching role. But hygiene, I really feel they just don't want to work in the front.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's a pay cut and
for sure.
maybe they're just yeah. not ready. They're not ready financially to do that, but mm-hmm. they'd rather retire. I don't know.
Yeah.
But clinical assistants, I do see moving up to the front if they are, but it goes back and forth. You know, you see that a lot too.
Yeah. I get a lot of assistants in my classes actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the ones that take them are, I mean, they're rock stars. Like I know they're going to go far just from hearing them talk about it. Like they get the documentation piece. They mm-hmm. get having good x-rays and good notes. Like they get it. I wish I could clone some of the ones that have been in my classes because they're just so excited about it. And yeah. if the assistant is going to do it, then the doctor's like, okay, I guess so. So it's such an easier way of implementing good documentation. So mm-hmm. if you've got a rock star assistant, send them to CE, and that's how they really grow and become so valuable mm-hmm. to the practice. Yeah. So you still have a lot of clients back in your hometown of Seattle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do you still go up there a pretty decent amount?
Oh yeah. I'm going to be there in about 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'm going to see 2 clients while I'm up there. Yeah.
Now,
it's a big market for me, especially because I'm from there.
Well, and it's funny because Dana, of course, we always talk about insurance. So Dana and I are always like, you know, what's going on with Delta Washington nowadays?
Geez.
I know. So I'm always like, you know, carriers and providers, we have to get along. And Dana's like,
no.
Okay, no. See, exactly.
No.
This is our dinner conversation. Like, but Dana, we need insurance. And you're like, no.
No.
It's really funny. Yeah, but I understand that though, because your area was really where I feel like a lot of the craziness came from that kind of started this whole era of administrative burden. But how has that landscape, because I know you know so many dentists up there,
mm-hmm.
has it gotten
worse?
Participation heavy? Have dentists gotten out of network? I mean, what's going on up there?
A lot of them are getting out of network.
Okay. And it's because the fee schedule is not rising or anything like that.
Delta is awful. They just are so, I don't know how else to say it, but just mean to doctors. They are very disruptive in the doctor-patient relationship. They reduce fees. You know, when I was in my own practice, I think it was 2008, I think it was, when Delta Dental Washington, well, it's Washington Dental Service up there, they slashed the fees for dentists by 15%. And the articles that Delta put in their newsletters and in their, and when they would talk to the press, what Delta would say is that, well, our dentists only work 4 days a week, you know, they don't even work hard, you know?
Wow.
And so Delta is so derogatory towards the dental practice. And the other thing that's really awful about Delta up in Washington is that they call themselves a nonprofit, and, but then they're, you know, their CEO and their board members are making like seven figures. And so, you know, it's a very awful situation up in Washington. So a lot of my doctors, in fact, the office that I worked in, you know, for 18 years up there, he is thinking about going out of network with Delta. And so we're talking about that, how it's going to impact the practice. And, and I have had so many doctors go out of network up there.
Yeah. And it seems, and it's funny because I know there's so many dentists in California, but doctors in California, I hear more from when I was going through, when we went through COVID, and whenever I get strategy calls, a lot of times it is doctors from California saying, okay, it's really bad here. So I, by these kind of conversations, I can hear where the pain is, like in which states. So I've always wondered, like, if you were in Delta, if you were in Virginia, or if you were in like Colorado or Kentucky, a Delta that wasn't quite Washington Dental Service, would you be, you know, this, have this feeling about them? I've always, it's kind of a joke that I make.
I know.
If she would be like this if she were in a different state. But I get it, because Washington Dental Service, I remember being in Virginia and reading the news about everything that's happening over there. And even my boss was like, what the heck is going on over there? How can they do that? You think they're going to do that here? And it put the rest of the country on alert.
For sure.
So, I mean, that you kind of were the canary in the coal mine, really.
Yeah.
So I get the feelings. I get it. But it is funny, because we'll talk and you know, sometime over dinner, Dana will be like, just get out of network. That's her answer. Well, it's so funny.
Well, it's like you have to, it has to be a very strategic process. And, you know, I think, I mean, in Washington State, it's always, I think I have a really bad taste in my mouth about Delta, you know, so I don't get into, there's not, definitely not any love lost there for sure.
But you also do work with a lot of offices that are PPO too. So, I mean, it's pretty unavoidable.
100%. I just try and be very unbiased and say, you know, this is the game that they play. And if you're going to be PPO, you have to play the game. And this is the game that we have to play.
Yeah. You got to know your numbers. You got to know your profitability.
I do not recommend to offices to stay in network or go out of network. Most of the time, the doctors that I'm working with have already made the decision. And now they're just asking my help for how do I implement it? What kind of verbal skills can I put in place? So I'm not the one that is helping them make the decision. I'm helping them run reports so that they have the data that they need to make a decision, but I'm not pulling the trigger for them. That's not my specialty.
Well, and also, like, you don't want it if it goes bad. Like if I train the team and they don't say the right things, or same for you, and it goes really badly, like, don't come to me. Like, you made the decision. So, you know, this is where it is. But yeah, so there's gotta be accountability, you know, on their end too. So Dana, how can, look at the time, it always happens. So how can they find you and tell them about your podcast?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get you on my podcast soon. So my podcast is The High Performing Dental Team. And most of the topics that I talk about, of course, revolve around software and not always just Dentrix software, but also like how do these third-party softwares work with the software, and how does your team interact with them? How do patients interact with them? So I'm always about the whole patient team workflow and all those efficiency. And I do also have a lot of guests on my podcast, so you can look for it. We do a weekly podcast that comes out every Monday, and you can look for that. And and if you want to sign up, just go to navoni.com and you'll get a little pop-up box right on the website. You can subscribe to the podcast and you're good to go.
Well, and you've got the membership and a whole bunch of classes too.
Yes.
While you're on Navoni, yes, check that out too, right? So, exactly. And the membership comes with what? It comes with access to courses. It comes to how much access to you? What does it come with?
Yeah. So we have three different tiers. Most of our clients are in the middle tier. It's called the premier tier, and that gives you access to all the courses, all the live webinars. So we have a live webinar going on today. And then we have group coaching calls every week. So these are live sessions where any of our members can come in and ask me whatever question they want, or, mm-hmm, you know, troubleshoot this with me, things like that. So that's one of the funnest things that we do.
And that is pretty cool. So you guys like do screen share and try to figure stuff out right on the call. That's cool.
Yes, yes. And then we have a community, and Bonnie, she manages most of the community. So that's where just like Q&A, it's like a Facebook group, but it's a community inside of our dashboard. Mm-hmm. And she'll do some live meetups there as well.
And, oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And then we do another thing I do in the membership is I do an annual practice audit. So I remote into your software and I look around and see, you know, where you could make improvements with efficiency. And I look at your reports, I look at your numbers, and I see, I see where you could make some improvements with your systems and things like that. So that's also a big part of the membership.
Wow. Cause people need that by itself too, right? So like you join the membership, you get that. That's insane. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll put links to the podcast, links to the membership in there. And then your events page, I'm sure you keep updated with where people can find you and stuff. So
definitely. Good.
All right. Well, dear listeners, hopefully you know Dana well enough where if you see her on the road at ADOM or at Thrive Live, you can go up and ask her all the questions. She's a lot of fun. One of my dear friends. So I'm always thankful for when you come on the show.
Oh, thank you.
And we always are like, we should do our podcast. And then months later, we're like, we need to do our podcast.
I know.
So I'm glad we finally got this going.
I know, me too. Life gets
And this was all me, the latest one, because she actually scheduled this in December. And then, you know, I had health issues. And then like, oh, wait, we have it on that day? What? And then we had to move it. So finally.
And then I had to move it. So I'm glad we finally connected.
I know. We can cross this off the list.
Exactly. So.
But dear listeners, as usual, I always thank you for spending time. Go check out Dana and what she has to offer. And go see her if she's in your neighborhood.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
We're all super busy. So thank you for making time for me today. The show notes will have any links that we referenced in the episode. You can also find links for my book, events, and my online insurance course, Dental Insurance Design and Management. I speak often around the country on management and insurance issues. Come hang out with me in one of my classes. I promise you'll laugh and learn.